Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Shannon Clemente.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So I was just reading news, checking social media the other day, scrolling around, and I see this post on Facebook by Clint Peck. You guys know the great Clint Peck. You know, he was a former MSU Extension agent, and then he started this really cool winery in Billings, Montana, Yellowstone Cellars and Winery, and it's under new ownership now. He says the kids are doing a great job running that. But I see this article, and I see that Clint Peck is now writing for Beef Magazine. And I'm like, hey, what the heck? We should see if Clint wants to join us on the show. And boom, here he is, Clint Peck in the house. Good to see you, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Glad to be here. Beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day. It's great to have you. You know, I was traveling. I was out on a few vacation days when the Montana Stock Growers Convention was in town. So I feel like I'm kind of, since I missed out on all that fun, I'm trying to make up for lost time by having you in today. And then we're going to have Leslie Robinson, the new president of the Stock Growers, here in the second half of the show as well.
So, oh, super.
Yeah. We were just talking. Man, there are so many MSU Extension agents that serve these various counties across in various regions across Montana that so many big names that moved on to other industries. It's pretty cool to talk with folks that are a part of that Extension Agent Alumni Network.
Yeah, you know, I got my start in Judith Basin County, Stanford, Montana. 1980, I went to work for the Extension Service, and I loved it. I loved that the community up there, the people, the agriculture, the diversity of the agriculture. And man, I'll tell you what, I graduated from Montana State in ag production. I didn't really start learning until I got to be a county agent. And at the end of the day, I think maybe I learned more from the farmers and ranchers I worked with than the other way around. But yeah, it was a great gig. And it is a stepping stone of sorts for a lot of men and women who then go on to other careers in agriculture. And community service in Montana.
Yeah, that's right. And then I know whenever I take the show on the road and we go out and travel to different communities, I always like to find that local extension agent to tell us, okay, what's going on in your neck of the woods? Because you know, as you travel the state, you like to get the ground perspective, and you get it from those extension agents.
They're typically pretty well wired into their communities.
Yeah. Well, I saw the article that you shared. It was an article about how we have shut down the southern border. Not for people. We have shut down the southern border. For cattle. Now, a lot of America First, you know, beef lovers might say, oh, great. Yeah, keep that foreign cattle out of America. But actually, the cattle industry down in the southern part of the U.S. and the southwest border area, they actually rely heavily on on that cattle coming across the border.
Yeah, Aaron, typically in a year, about a million two head of feeder cattle come across the border from Mexico. And those cattle are put on in grow yards and put on winter wheat pasture all the way into Kansas. I think there have been those Mexican cattle come all the way to Montana.
So it's a pretty big part of supporting American agriculture as well.
Absolutely.
Hold that thought. More to follow with Clint Peck. He's got great insight. He just had a global beef roundup that he published here recently, a couple of days.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I thought he might have a bottle of wine in his hand when he showed up in studios, or maybe some beef. I mean, you write for Beef Magazine. You, yep. know, you don't bring beef with you wherever you go.
I could have brought a bottle of wine. You know, my dad always said you can't drink all day if you don't start early.
He must be a bobcat. Huh? He sounds
yeah, exactly. Bobcats go.
Big game tomorrow for you. Yeah. Clint. Yeah. So this was interesting. So I see this story. You and I were kind of joking during the break. It's like, okay, so we can shut down the southern border for cattle, but we can't shut down the southern border for people. But I digress. Talk about why they shut down the southern border for cattle and what a big deal this actually is for American producers.
Well, you know, what you said about the people kind of goes hand in hand with why they shut down the border, because the screwworm, which is a really bad pest in all warm-blooded animals, has been stopped coming into North America, Central America, by a thing called the Darien Gap, which is a biological barrier between Colombia and Panama, where typically people movement and animal movement has been stopped for decades, if not hundreds of years. With the movement of people and their animals north, one cow was found at the Guatemala-Mexico border about a month, November 22nd, and it was found with a screwworm in her body and by inspection. So that was the first one that we've known about for decades. The system kind of works because that finding that screwworm in that cow was reported by Mexican cattle health authorities to USDA APHIS. APHIS immediately, because of protocol, shut the border down to all cattle imports from Mexico. And as one screwworm and one cow. Now, we don't know how many other cattle might have slipped past. Probably not none, if not many.
Yeah. And it's kind of a reminder of our screwy southern border policies coming out of Washington, D.C., but hopefully that's all set to come to a change here very soon. But nonetheless, like I say, this, you know, some of us, you know, may think, oh, yeah, keep that Mexican cattle out of America. But in reality, as you talked about, we may get those cows as far north as here in Montana, Kansas, where they're, you know, putting them out to pasture, for example.
Yeah, you know, and there are a lot of those feed yards, those stocker operations that rely on those cattle, especially seasonally when northern cattle aren't available just because of the biological nature of beef production, cattle production. So there's an argument that says that maybe these cattle kind of help us because it helps keep those grow yards, those stocker operations in business so that seasonally they can accept the more northern cattle or those cattle maybe from the Midwest that may go south into those grow yards or onto wheat pasture in Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, New Mexico, those kind of places.
And to kind of put that in a Montana perspective, a lot of us have talked about the need for more meat packing facilities in Montana, right? So
yep.
We get more domestic, you know, production so we don't become so reliant on these big meat packers. Well, part of the challenge there is, okay, you get that supply on a seasonal basis at certain times of year, but you need a year-round supply in order to keep a business like that up and running. So how do we continue to build that year-round supply? That's something the Montana Stock Growers and others have been working to test and address, right?
Yeah, you know, in 1.2 million, I don't know, for a Mexican cattle a year, whether that's too many, whether it's not enough. I think right now we're seeing a little bit of a spike in feeder cattle prices. Maybe a perception that supply of cattle from Mexico might slow down now. If they do reopen the border, it might be very slow in having those cattle come back across north. And there's a lot of perspective, and I'm not going to judge whether it's really good or whether it's bad. It is what it is.
It is what it is. And what do those Mexican producers do in the meantime?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds in Chihuahua, in Sonora, of family, Mexican family ranchers who right now don't have a market for their cattle. And you have to have some empathy for them because they're looking ahead at Christmas. They're not getting their checks for those cattle coming across the border. And it's a tough situation. And those cattle, they just can't put them on ice. They're growing. They need feed, food to survive. They need some care. And yeah, it's a tough sledding deal.
You've traveled a lot over the years to Argentina and Brazil. You know, talking about beef, looking at markets. And we could talk about that, but what have been some of the things that you've been writing about for Beef Magazine that you've had the most fun or you've found the most interesting to write about here recently?
Well, there's two areas that I really kind of have been working on. One is the area of beef quality and beef quality assurance and making sure that that we can help our producers in the U.S., whatever phase they are in the production chain, produce quality cattle in terms of eating characteristics, and then consistency with the beef that they produce, because I've often preached that consistency is almost as important as quality itself. Because when you go to a restaurant, when you go to the supermarket, you want those steaks you buy or that hamburger you buy to be the same every time.
You get one bad experience, you may not go back. You're like, well, I don't know exactly. If I'm going to get it. It has to consistently be good. You're right. Yeah.
Consistency is huge. So beef quality assurance is part of my gig. And the other is global beef production. I have had over the last 25, 30 years the great experience of traveling to mostly South America, but Australia, New Zealand, Mexico, Canada, to learn about beef production systems in those countries. One of the greatest things was for many years I took beef study tours to South America, to Argentina and Brazil.
Interesting. Hold that thought.
Sure.
Quick break. Back with Clint Peck after this. Hey, my
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, so I missed out myself. I know Danny Reberg, when he filled in for me on the show, had the folks from the Montana Stock Growers Convention join him on the show, but I missed out. So earlier this morning, I was joking with Clint Peck. I was like, you know, I missed out on covering the Stock Growers Convention, so I was trying to just get up to speed on everything I might have missed. So Clint, I got a little lazy this morning. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to have some fun. I'm going to play around. I'm going to go on ChatGPT, one of these, artificial intelligence sites. So I asked ChatGPT, what is the latest news regarding U.S. beef prices and cattle markets? And, of course, we'll hear great information in our reports and everything. You know, Layden Orgland's report will be coming up here in a few minutes. But when it comes to beef prices and production, And he tells me this is spot on. I think they pulled the information from the American Angus Association and the National Beef Wire. Beef production recently rose by 14.5% week over week, reaching 531.5 million pounds, but it remains slightly below last year's level. Weekly cattle slaughter also increased by 14.6% compared to the week prior, but is down year over year due to tighter supplies. Live cattle weights are steady but show a slight increase compared to last year. Okay, and then I also asked about cattle prices and market dynamics. But when it comes to beef production, one of your latest global beef roundups has focused on Argentina.
Right.
What stands out when it comes to Argentina? Because you were talking about how, you know, over the years you did beef study tours down there.
Right.
And
right. You're
looking at doing them again.
Yeah, yeah. So in Argentina, you know, the government plays a huge role in the agrarian economy in Argentina, especially the beef sector in Argentina. And for decades, the Argentine government has used beef prices to sort of quell social unrest in the country when there's times of recession, depression, because beef is so important to that country and to the people of that country. I mean, they're the consummate carnivores in the world, and they when the government wants to keep the people happy, they will put export controls on their domestic beef so they could keep more beef in the country. And they haven't calculated the types of cuts that they want to keep in country to keep retail beef prices low in that country. So they will manipulate the market like crazy to keep people happy. And then when after people get happy and they need a little more money into their treasury, then they will release that beef to go to the export markets. And they put a pretty heavy export tax on those beef products when the people are happy and there's beef production going on down there.
Well, and Brazil has done this before, too, where they tried to limit beef exports to keep the prices down for the people. But then it kind of backfired on them because when you limit the prices, you limit the incentive for people to produce more beef, and then you get less supply, and so it had the opposite effect.
And that has happened in Argentina, especially it happened after 2001 when they had their big economic collapse in December of 2001. And that's exactly what happened. Their cattle numbers went from 55 million in Argentina down to 51 or 2 million within 2 or 3 years. Because of those export controls, so it absolutely did the opposite, and it also hurt the cattle sector. Both Argentina and Brazil, they've done that for years.
You know, we think about it. The big picture is it's like electricity. We just need more of it. Beef. We just need more of it. And yet, that brings us kind of to inventories, right?
And
so when it comes to cattle prices, this is what ChatGPT pulled. And you said this one really stood out to you. Cattle prices remain historically high, driven by a multi-year decline in the U.S. beef cow herd. The herd fell to 28.22 million head as of January 24, its lowest in over a decade. And, of course, you pointed to that Save the Cowboys, Stop the American Prairie Reserve sign that I have right here in our Montana Talk studios. But without going down that line here, when it just comes to the numbers in the U.S. beef cow herd, look, we need more cows, more ranchers, more beef. We need more electricity.
Yeah, we do need more land for all kinds of agricultural production. And, what's happening is you look between Billings and Laurel, right out our window right here, and you see farmland, grazing land, hay land that's being converted into urban subdivisions, suburban subdivisions. And it's a phenomenon that we can't stop. We also see a lot of landowners coming into places like Montana, whether they're billionaires from California or New York or Florida, they come in and buy these ranches, and then they kick the cattle off or greatly reduce the numbers. That affects the inventory. We see things like the American Prairie Preserve coming in and try to put land in non-use, and it does affect our communities. It affects our food supply, and that trend is not going to stop, Aaron.
Yeah.
And so the beef industry need to figure out how we're going to address that.
Well, that's why I know one thing that Farm Bureau has talked about, and I'm assuming they talked about it once again at the Stock Growers Convention here last week as well, which we will have to bring up with Leslie Robinson here in a few minutes, is I know they're really trying to figure out, okay, we have, ag land is taxed at a certain rate for a good reason, because you have a gigantic swath of land. But you can't tax it like real estate, so it has, it has a lower rate for ag. But there's people that are buying up ag properties, but they're not using it for agricultural production, and so they shouldn't be getting that same incentive. But it's tricky. How do you define that? How do we tweak that where you don't, stick a bunch of farmers and ranchers with higher taxes, but you do make sure that these people who come in and buy these properties just so they can have their little luxury real estate but not keep it in production, they don't get the ag production benefits.
Well, and in our society, I mean, that's something. There's always the willing seller and willing buyer, and the people that come into the state that reduce their cattle numbers or kick the cattle off altogether, I would kind of hate to see them treated differently, because there is this freedom that we have in our country to be able to own property and do what we want with that property, as long as it doesn't harm somebody else. So it's a tough one, especially taxation of agricultural land, and I guess I would not like to see those taxes go up on those agricultural lands just because we differentiate one person from another.
Yeah. You were at the Montana Stock Growers Convention. What stood out to you just from BSing with folks or attending any of the presentations?
Well, you know what really impresses me is the amount of young people that come into that convention. We've always sort of flagellated ourselves for the graying or the balding of American or Montana agriculture. But, man, I'll tell you what, I looked around that crowd, and there were a lot of young producers, really smart, energetic, active young cattle ranchers that are going to be the future of our beef industry in Montana and elsewhere. They're out there. We just sometimes don't tend to recognize them until, of course, you know, they get into leadership job positions. But, you know, we have people like Leslie Robinson that's coming up on your show.
Oh, she's
one of my heroes.
She's great.
For what she's done for agriculture, for Montana in general. And she's just a great leader, but she's that generation coming up, and she might not say she's one of the younger ones, but in my perspective, she certainly
is. She is, yeah.
And but there's a lot of them that are in their 20s and 30s that are out there.
Well, you know, I was going to say, because my cousin, he's out in Terry, and, you know, he and his brother's ranch, in the Terry Fallon area down into the Plevna area, et cetera, but... He said the same thing in Terry. He noticed that a lot of his friends that he grew up with, and he's younger than me, I think he's low 30s, and so he said a lot of his friends are now moving back to take over the family ranch. So I wonder if a lot of these areas, those ranches were settled around the same time, so there were a lot of people of the same age that started that ranch, and then it got handed off to the next generation, and now a lot of these areas are being handed off to the next generation, so some of these young families are now coming back and now getting back into the ranch, meaning more into agriculture, so that's why you're seeing more of these young people now.
Which is a great model. So, you know, the young man or woman goes up on the farm or ranch, they leave to pursue other careers for a period of time, and then they come back, and they've got this great knowledge base about not just what goes on that farm or ranch, but what goes on in the cities around the world. And they can put that to use, and they can become the leaders of our industry.
Looking ahead to 2025, what's the big story for American agriculture heading into 2025, or what could the big story be?
Well, it's still going to be, you know, weather is always a factor out there. I mean, it's funny, I was texting a friend of mine up in central Montana the other day, and I said, hey, what's going on up there? And he says, well, moisture's the hot topic. I texted back. I said, when isn't moisture the hot topic?
There's either too much or not enough.
Yeah, usually it's not enough. But, you know, one of the things that we have to remember that in Montana, we live in a semi-arid climate, and it's dry. And sometimes that dryness is interrupted by a wet year or two or a wet season. But moisture is going to – I mean, it drives everything and the weather. So that's going to be always the big news.
That's right. Less than a minute to go before we get to the break here. Clint Peck, it's been so great catching up with you. We got to do this more often. What about RFK Jr. Potentially serving as head of Department of Health and Human Services? You know, he's talking about beef tallow in particular.
Yeah. I mean,
and how healthy beef is actually for the American people.
Yeah, you know, it's he might be kind of a loose cannon on the deck, but we'll see what he does. I mean, there's some really good things about our beef industry and the beef we eat. And hopefully our leadership in Washington, D.C. will recognize not only the how good beef is for us as a society, but also how good farming and ranching is for our culture and our economy in the U.S.
Yeah, not
we
to mention
really
the environment.
Farmers and ranchers.
That's right. Clint Peck, great to see you back in the saddle writing for Beef Magazine. And
glad to be there.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
Enjoyed our time together.
My pleasure.
All right. Quick break. We've got Leslie Robinson, the president now of the Montana Stock Growers Association. If I'm not mistaken, first woman ever to be the president of the MSGA. So anyway, we'll chat with Leslie right after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Continuing on with a series of clips from my video podcast with agricultural meteorologist Brian Bledsoe here today. And during our conversation, he highlighted a few key things farmers and ranchers should be preparing for during the winter of 2025.
I think we need to be prepared, and this is especially true for Montana. The thing that has been most notable for the past, say, 4 weeks has been the building of the snowpack in Siberia and in Canada. those areas are covered up right now. That is a very significant source for Arctic and cold air as we get deeper in the winter. So there have been times in past years where that hasn't been the case so far. So that indication alone tells me you better prepare for some cold, and some of that cold is going to be significant cold, and you better prepare for some snow. So if you're going to start calving in January and you live in the northern plains and the northern Rockies, you better be prepared for weather that you did not see last year. Yes.
Of course, yesterday, Bledsoe shared that La Nina not really playing an impact much on winter weather, but that snowpack and cold weather in Canada, the Arctic, and in Siberia, that could play a big factor lasting from now all the way in to April, early March. It might not be a fun calving season. We'll see. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Leslie Robinson is one of my heroes. Leslie Robinson, I don't know if you got a chance to hear a little bit about what Clint Peck had to say in the first half of the program, but great now to have former Phillips County Commissioner and the newly elected president of the Montana Stockgrowers Association, Leslie Robinson, now with us on the show. Leslie, always great to chat with you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Aaron, and I always enjoy visiting with you.
Well, it's great to have you on. Gal, I remember going back, I don't know how many years ago, was it 12 years ago, 13 years ago, and there you were on Capitol Hill back in Washington, D.C., testifying before congressional committees, standing up on behalf of Montana ranchers. And I can't remember what the hearing was, if it was a sage-grouse hearing or who knows what at the time. But for a young lady, you've been in the fight for quite some time now on behalf of your fellow ranchers. Talk about what it's just like to be elected the president of the Montana Stock Growers.
I'm pretty excited to be the president of Stock Growers. I think we have a good team right now. I've always respected the leadership in the Stock Growers, and I just look forward to continuing on with the legacy of a strong cattle industry organization in Montana.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, are you not 140 years, if I'm not mistaken, for the Montana Stock Growers? Are you the first ever woman president of the Montana Stock Growers?
I am. 1884 was when the Montana Stock Growers organization was started, and I am the very first female president. So it's historic. I'm very happy to be in that role, and it's just a pretty neat thing.
That's a very cool deal, yeah. And I haven't noticed it get too much of attention out there in the rest of the media too often, but just a cool deal. And then, of course, you also serve on the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission, and apparently you're the chair of that as well. So pretty cool to have a rancher with a key voice at the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission. You know, Clint Peck and I were talking offline about how, you know, so often there's been efforts in the past to create divisions between sportsmen and ranchers, and one of the big things, you know, that I know the governor has been focused on is look, how do we improve the relations and improve access as a result too?
Right. Well, our ranch has been part of the block management program since 2000, so we've always had good relationships with sportsmen, and it's a two-way street, and if you respect each other, then things go a lot better. But I've been on the role as chair for getting close to 4 years, I guess, now, and I enjoy that role also. I think it's very diverse subjects, very diverse opinions, and I just really enjoy that role.
So I missed out on the Stock Growers Convention this year because I was out on a few days of vacation. So Clint's been catching me up on a little bit of what I missed. Tell us, what did I miss during the Stock Growers Convention this year? What are some of the big issues you want to focus on in the year ahead?
Right. Well, one of our biggest things is we started a producer profitability initiative this past year, and And we went around and talked to 1,000 different producers and business people from across the state. I think it was 13 different meetings. And so we're just continuing on taxes. A lot of the tax rules that were put in will sunset if not renewed at the end of 2025. So that's really one of our top priorities. And our convention, we had some excellent speakers. Brian Bledsoe is the meteorologist that gives us monthly updates if you're a Montana Stockgrower member, and he was one of the speakers. We just had some very good speakers. We had an excellent attendance and just very good crowds at all the meetings, and our convention went just great this year.
Yeah, you talk about taxes in particular. I know one of the challenges that's been brought up for a couple of years at least now by both the stock growers and Montana Farm Bureau is what do we do with some of these properties that are ag properties that are getting bought out, and then the new buyers aren't necessarily using it for agricultural purposes, but yet they're still getting the tax benefits as if it was agriculture. The hard part is, where do you draw that line? Who makes that determination? But it sounds like that's something you guys are still working to tackle as well.
Right. I have not seen the actual language of the bills that are going to come forward, but I think that's going to be one of the top issues, I guess, during the legislature this year. And just like you said, just kind of fine tuning what that looks like and not leaving agriculture people behind or making it too difficult to prove their income or however it's set up. But it is something that needs to be looked at. And one of our goals is to keep agriculture land in production, because there's just a lot of land coming out of production, and a lot of younger people or just people in general who would be interested in getting into ranching, but with the prices and everything just so high, we're trying to look to maybe lower the barriers to get people into ranching or to continue ranching on a family ranch.
That's a great point. How many people out there, how many young people would love nothing more than to have a ranch, or if they've already got a family ranch, to be able to expand their operations and maybe even to support more than just one family. And yet they feel like they're stuck in the middle of outfits like the APR trying to push them off the land over here, and then maybe some, you know, big money buyer trying to take up the land over there, and then they don't even keep it in production, and that affects that entire community because an in production ranch and an in production farm supports that entire community, from the banker and the insurance folks on Main Street to the kids being in the schools to everything else, veterinarians, all the economic activity. And you just pull that land out of production, you're pulling that whole community apart, basically. We've got Clint Peck here as well, still with us after he joined us in the first half. And Clint, I think you're having Leslie Robinson on your podcast next week. Do you want to throw an early question to Leslie before your podcast?
Oh, I think we know what we're going to talk about pretty much, Leslie, next week on our podcast. But just looking forward to it, looking forward to working with you as much as I can your tenure as Stockgrowers president. All I can say is the Montana Stockgrowers Association is such a well-respected organization in Montana, and then when I go travel nationally, people really recognize the leadership that organization plays nationally in the cattle business, and I'm just really so proud to have my friend Leslie being president.
What's your podcast going to focus on next week?
Oh, we're just going to talk about some of the same things that you're asking. What is the direction? What are some of the initiatives of the stock growers? And what are things that you, Leslie, would like to accomplish through your tenure as president? And then also your sort of position, we're not going to dwell on it, but as chair of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. We're going to talk about those things.
Good stuff. Yeah, Leslie, anything you want to tell folks across Montana, or maybe, you know, what a new administration in Washington means for farm and ranch country as well?
Well, all I can say is I slept pretty good election night, and I just I feel like we can accomplish a lot more and not have to play so much defense, rather than we can maybe get some things done on the offensive side, which is always great. Like I was talking about with the taxes or some of the other things that we're working on. And I just have to say, I don't feel like I'm that old, but I feel like I've been around for a long time. And and you guys have always been a part of it also. So thank you for all your support through the years, because I said at the Stock Growers, this is like a quarter of a century ago that I was on the Montana Stock Growers board as a board member. So,
and as Clint says, you are still young. You're one of the young ones there as well. So, but there's a lot of folks even younger than you that are getting more and more involved and getting back to run the family ranch. So that's good to see. You know, more young families keeping this part of not just our economy but our culture alive.
Right, and not only that, but like all the things that you mentioned, one of the things you didn't talk about was volunteers. If you take away the family ranches and a lot of the families that live on there, then we don't, in small rural communities, we don't have ambulance members, we don't have school board. I mean, the list goes on and on, fire department. Rural communities run on volunteers. So that is one of the things that is definitely affected.
Good point. Well, Leslie Robinson, congrats on becoming the president of the Montana Stock Growers Association. Great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for your time. And anytime you need a microphone to get the word out about an important topic, get a hold of us here, because, we'd love to help you out.
All right. Well, thank you, and I appreciate taking the time to visit with me. So we'll see you
sometime
somewhere along the road.
All right, perfect. All right, yeah, we'll have to have you in studio one of these days as well. All right, quick break. A good news story to share right after this.
For eligible. This holiday season, give the gift of power and precision with Works Power Tools at Menards. Whether you're building, fixing, or crafting, Works drills deliver the power and control for any project. For those tougher jobs, Works impact drivers provide all the torque needed to make heavy-duty tasks a breeze. Hurry in today and pick up your 20-volt Works cordless drill or driver now at Menards.
Warm season's greetings to you all from Menards.
Oh.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, here on this Freedom Friday, with the quick few minutes that we have left in the show, there's a story that I've got to share with you here. It's a great story about Montana Highway Patrol Trooper Wade Palmer. But first, I got some breaking news here. This just came in, foxnews.com. Former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi was injured while traveling overseas and has been hospitalized. The extent of the former Speaker's injury is unknown at the time of this reporting, but she was admitted to the hospital for evaluation. This was while she's traveling in Luxembourg. So breaking news that I just saw come across the old smartphone here. All right. Incredible story here. Thanks to our friend Peter Christian. He covered this event yesterday in Stevensville, Montana. Hero Montana Highway Patrol Trooper Wade Palmer and his family were officially presented with a beautiful new smart home thanks to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The new home in Stevensville is an ADA-compliant smart home and was delivered mortgage-free to Palmer, his wife, and his two daughters. Over 100 well-wishers gathered to honor Palmer and his wife, Lindsay, including John Carroll, a retired FDNY battalion chief, former Attorney General Tim Fox, the head of the Montana Highway Patrol, and several others. This is Kurt Sager with the Montana Highway Patrol who spoke at the event yesterday. The audio is a little bit hard to hear, but it's such a great message. I think you'll enjoy hearing it.
Good afternoon. My name is Kurt Sager. I'm the Colonel of the Montana Highway Patrol. I'm honored by the invitation to be here today with Wade and the Palmer family. Rick served the people of Montana for 8 years with the Montana Highway Patrol. During those 8 years, Wade served with distinction, earning the highest award Montana Highway Patrol gives, the Medal of Valor. Not once, but twice. The first Medal of Valor was given for his 2014 heroic actions when he rescued a female motorist who was thrown from her vehicle and was lying in a median. Multiple vehicles were losing control at the crash scene, and one of the vehicles was headed directly towards the female. Without hesitation, Trooper Palmer rushed to her aid and was able to pull her to safety before she was hit by a vehicle. His second Medal of Valor was earned in 2019 when Trooper Palmer located a suspect who earlier that evening had shot and killed two citizens and seriously injured another. During this encounter, Trooper Palmer was shot multiple times. In both circumstances, despite the danger to himself, Trooper Palmer placed himself in harm's way to protect innocent citizens. Wade to tell you he was just doing his job. But that kind of courage is only displayed by people of the highest character. Wade is a man of the highest character. Wade is a hero. Although he is no longer a trooper, Wade will always be family, and he will always be a hero. The Department of Justice and the Montana Highway Patrol are proud of Wade, and honored to express that here today. Montana is a state that supports its law enforcement officers. You can see that here today. I'm humbled by the support our agency in general and the Palmer family specifically has received from the public during his journey to recovery. We're blessed to live in a state like Montana. We're also blessed to have Pedestal Towers. Pedestal Towers is an organization that's committed to honoring the sacrifices of America's heroes. Heroes like Wade Palmer. Today, Wade and his family are the recipients of a home designed and built to meet Wade's needs. On behalf of the Montana Highway Patrol, thank you, Pedestal Towers. Thank you, Montana. Thank you to everybody that's here for having Wade's back. Wade, Lindsay, Maya, and Sierra, welcome home.
Yeah, great message there by Colonel Sager with the Montana Highway Patrol. Former Attorney General Tim Fox also spoke at the Tunnel to Tower event in Stevensville, Montana. This is John Carroll, the former battalion chief for FDNY, who was also on hand for the Tunnel to Towers event.
Wade and Lindsay, great family. I met them last night for the first time. They are true Americans, very patriotic. Wade served this country and served Missoula and Stevensville, and he's been part of this great state of Montana, doing what first responders do, protecting the people, and I'm proud and honored to have met him.
All right, let's see. We're short on time. Actually, let me see if I can play a little bit of this conversation. Again, thanks to Peter Christian for sharing this audio with us. He spoke with the sheriff in Stevensville at the event as well.
Talking with Sheriff Jeremiah Peterson. Sheriff, first of all, this is an exciting day that followed a dreadful tragedy several years ago. And now something wonderful is happening today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Wade is a true hero. And it's just amazing that this organization has come together to help him and his family out because of the sacrifice that he made for, you know, the citizens of Missoula County and the citizens of the state of Montana.
I know that you were a part of the Sheriff's Department several years ago when this incident occurred. What are your personal memories of those several days after that terrible incident?
Well, just the way that the sense of community, you know, within law enforcement, how everyone came together, you know, they helped out Wade's family in a number of ways. And, you know, just that law enforcement community is very close and tight-knit.
All right, full story, go to MontanaTalks.com. Plus, we've got great photos of the home the Palmer family now has.
Hey.